You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 15th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante Guarneri. How was your new year, Dante?
It's been good so far. Looking forward to the rest of the NBA season and hopefully a couple more wins for my Nets.
Yeah, the NBA season should be starting to pick up because the NBA front office does a good job of kind of backloading the schedule for once the NFL season kind of winds down. So we're getting to that point where we'll have those ABC Saturday primetime games, those Sunday games. A lot of basketball coming forward once pro football gets out of our way.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll ramp up some of the intensity on the parts of the defense, and I can stop complaining about that.
Well, there's been plenty of people in the media who've been criticizing that, so you're not alone in that. Zach Lowe wrote a piece about it, and then I was watching the Trailblazers-Cavs game on ESPN last night, and LeBron did not feel like putting in any effort. Some very bad closeouts, so he made the Trailblazers look good, which is kind of rare this time of year.
Yeah, it seemed like Mo Harkless was getting anything he wanted, and that was probably the first time that's ever been said in Mo Harkless's NBA career.
Yeah, Mo Harkless doesn't seem like he'd be a great LeBron stopper, but he was doing it well. So let's get right into the news. There's actually been a decent amount of news since the calendar flipped to 2017. We're going to begin with the Kyle Korver trade, which is probably about a week old at this point. The Atlanta Hawks decided to trade Kyle Korver to the Cleveland Cavaliers in return for Mike Dunleavy and a first-round pick, which they had flipped. So that it's this year's first-round pick, which they had flipped with Portland in a separate trade. So the Cavs get another shooter for LeBron to disperse to. And the other thing that I want to get out of the way that I really enjoyed about this trade is that the Cleveland Cavaliers were able to make yet another trade exception, something that their GM has been very good at throughout his 10 years. So I'm very impressed by that. But on the Korver side of the move for me, I'm not as big of a fan as everyone else. I just think he doesn't move the needle too much. I think he's a nice little fill-in until J.R. Smith is ready to get back into action in 2 months, 2.5 months or so. But what's your opinion on this trade?
I actually really liked it. I think I'm going to go a different way here. I think it moves the needle just enough. When you consider the elite teams in the league, and I'm talking maybe the three teams at this point, in Cleveland, Golden State, and San Antonio on their best day, you're really improving at the margins. It's very, very small as far as how much of a difference you can make mid-season specifically. Obviously, the Warriors were able to do it in the offseason by gaining someone like Kevin Durant, but for a team like Cleveland that really can't do as much, they're locked in cap wise. It's very difficult for their GM David Griffin to make any large move to move the needle too far. This type of deal allows them to at least feel comfort going down the stretch without someone like J.R. Smith, and going into a playoff situation, you can literally surround LeBron James with four elite shooters. And on the Atlanta Hawks side of things, I actually think for them that he didn't move the needle that much, and he actually is going to be missed because of the guy he was. He's always been known as someone that the fans enjoyed having around. He's always been a good force in the locker room, but the numbers haven't really been there the last couple of years. He's had a dip in points. His 3-point field goal percentage has dropped. So for the Hawks side, it really wasn't that big of a deal that they were able to at least get that first round pick, and they'll be able to play some of their younger guys a bit more.
Yeah, and I thought that for the Hawks side, I agree that I actually liked it for the Hawks side just because they did get a first round pick for a 35-year-old or whatever Korver is at this point. And I actually think their starting lineup might actually improve a little bit, especially on the defensive end. But it obviously hurts their bench where they don't have a quality wing like Thabo coming off anymore. But their starting lineup should be solid. And I think this is an easy way to transition into talking about the Hawks, just because they have been on the tip of everyone's tongue over the past 2 weeks or so with the Millsap trade rumors. And now they're saying they're not going to get rid of him. But then people are saying that they're just saying that to get more interest in him. And then just how this team looks going forward is very interesting to me.
Yeah, and I think that they're still very much in a place that they can contend for a higher playoff seed. I don't think that they'd be able to get through Boston, Toronto, or Cleveland in a 7-game series. Though they have pieces and a lot of very quality pieces in Bazemore and in Cephalosha and in the emergence of Tim Hardaway, I don't think that they have enough firepower to push them through to the conference finals or the finals at all. And I don't think Kyle Korver would have done much about it. I think now they're at a point where they have to wonder if they should make any moves on the offensive side to really help them out, because right now I just don't see that offense coming to beat a team like Boston or Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're in such a weird spot, because it feels like they're getting to a point where they're shifting kind of eras. Since they still have Dwight and Schroeder, I think they'll still be solid and they can't really completely tank and rebuild, but they also don't really have many young guys who have oozing potential. DeAndre Bembry and Torian Prince haven't done a whole heck of a lot this year, but they'll get some added minutes, so that'll kind of help the future. But it really just comes down to whether they do get rid of Millsap and maybe are able to add maybe a young piece and a decent pick. But the one thing that I had heard is a slight possibility, because Millsap does like it in Atlanta, is something you see more in baseball, where a player gets traded and with just half a season left, and then he goes into free agency and signs back with the other team. I think there's a slight chance that happens if the Hawks do move Millsap, but I know we've talked a lot about that trade at this point. But the Hawks are in such a curious spot, I think.
Yeah, and maybe it doesn't mean much, but Millsap did go on record to say that the Hawks upper brass has told him that he won't be traded this season. So for what it's worth, I think it could be time to put that to rest. I obviously don't want to, if someone comes up with a trade that the Hawks just can't afford to pass up, then of course they're going to have to make that deal. But for the time being, I do think that Millsap's going to stay with this team, and I guess they're just going to ride a few games over 500 the rest of the way.
Yeah, they will be banking on a fifth or sixth seed and then a quality playoff matchup and seeing what happens. And
do you think Indiana can overtake them? I mean, they're 6 games over 500 right now.
Indiana. Indiana's so weird to me. They have talent at different spots. I don't really like how the pieces fit. I might just still stick with Indiana there, just due to the fact that they have a better coach. I'm pulling up the standings now. They're 2 games back. I mean, I certainly think so. I still think that the Bucks are actually the team to watch out for that fourth spot, and I still believe in the Hornets. The Wizards are finally playing well. That kind of 7 through 10 race in the East should be pretty fun, I think. Maybe not fun, but close. The Hawks, it's so weird that a team who's fourth in their division, just the way the NBA is right now, just thinks they have no chance, and they're thinking about getting rid of probably their best player.
I mean, the thing is, I don't think they have that chance, right? Like, it's even matchup wise, I probably wouldn't take any of the 1-5 of Atlanta over the 1-5 of Cleveland, except maybe Paul Millsap for someone, but besides that, it doesn't really, you know, make any sense for them to push for a title that won't be there, because even if you do, by some very small chance, get past Cleveland, you have to play a Golden State team that has four perennial All-Stars.
Well, so, and they've matched up horrible with Cleveland. In that one season where they had over 60 wins and were on fire and people thought they may have had a chance, they weren't able to. So the Hawks are just in an interesting spot, and I think they will make the playoffs, but unless they're in that 4-5 matchup. I can't see them winning a series for sure. The next piece of news that I'd like to touch on is DeMarcus Cousins, one of the most talked about NBA stars in the game just because of his attitude and his just booginess. There was a report earlier this week that he's actually, it sounds like he's going to end up signing a 5-year, $207 million max extension to stay in Sacramento. I have so many questions about it, but I know you have some thoughts, so I'll let you start it out.
Yeah, I really, really hate it. I think as a guy that's been watching Boogie constantly complain about how bad the organization has been in getting players around him, getting assets around him, it kind of sucks to see that he's very willing to just take this large offer without really considering anything else or any other possibilities going into the offseason. And that being said, he also still, I think he's a 2018 free agent, so he still has a couple of years to even make this decision. But
that means he's locked up through like 2023 or 24. It's insane.
It's really, really astonishing. And you know, the fact that he's going to take up 30% of the salary cap, it tells me that he really doesn't even care what's around him. He really wanted to just make this money, and I don't blame him because he deserves the money. He's improved every single year in a number of categories, and he's certainly in my mind at least a top 15 player in this league. It's just unfortunate that this is the organization that he's doing it with.
Yeah, giving the Kings that other 70%, I don't know if they'll be able to do anything decent. Because right now, his second best player he's playing with is Rudy Gay, Darren Collison.
Rudy Gay. I mean, he might not even be on the team for that much longer. They'll probably trade him for the wrong piece, or even worse, get a draft pick and draft more big men. It's just a team that has been built up on frustrating move, and it's sad to see that he's willing to continue with them.
Yeah, continuing on for the next 7 or 8 years with the one of the worst franchises in all of professional sports, and such a talented player. I think this is what we might be hearing in 3 years or so with Anthony Davis too, because he's going to have that big time money coming his way, unless he decides to change locations in a franchise that doesn't seem like they know how to build around stars. So I don't think we've seen the end of this conversation in terms of uber talented players on not competent franchises.
Yeah, and those are good situations that probably mirror each other. Actually, I think you're actually probably going to see an exodus of players from New Orleans, and hopefully that allows players around this league to join forces with him, because he's in a tough situation himself.
Absolutely. And then the final piece of news is one of the biggest stories of the new year. Whatever in the world is going on with Derrick Rose. So he got benched in the fourth quarter of last Saturday's game against the Indiana Pacers. It sounds like him and Hornacek don't have a very good relationship whatsoever. So then come Monday against the New Orleans Pelicans, he showed up to the shoot around, and then later that day, no one knew what was happening. We didn't know where he was. We didn't even know if he was really okay. We learned to find out he had to go on a family emergency, but yet he didn't really tell anyone in the organization, which is really quite strange. So then he did end up playing last night, Wednesday night, against the 76ers, and actually had one of his best games of the season with 25 points. On 11 of 16 shooting, his sixth 25-point game of the season, and they've only gone 1-5 in those games, so I don't know how much it means. But I think the real story is just how he missed that game and just what's really going on in New York.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to say about his character and I guess his relationship so quickly falling apart with Hornacek. And I think you can even bring this back to his time in Chicago, where he was having difficulty dealing with the star and Jimmy Butler and even the organization as a whole. But more importantly, I think this speaks to the Knicks organization as a whole and their inability to kind of get it together. And you know, this is now the second story in a row where we're talking about floundering organizations. But there is just such a stark difference between the well-run organizations and the really poorly made and poorly created organizations in this league. And I think you put the Knicks in that latter category. Starting with the Joakim Noah signing this summer that basically made absolutely no sense for a team looking to plan for the future, signing a guy that can barely play more than 25 minutes a game to a four-year, $68 million contract or $72 million. It's absolutely absurd. And I looked at the contracts for the future of this team and seeing how they can kind of build themselves up. If you don't include Derek Rose's and Brandon Jennings cap holds for next summer, because looking at how this situation has been dealt with, I don't know if Derek Rose is going to be coming back for any money next year. They still only have $24 million in cap space because of Joakim Noah's $17 million a year contract. That just puts your team at a huge disadvantage going into an offseason that you're really hoping to make a move and help Kristaps build this team into the future.
Well, yeah, the ideal situation that everyone was kind of talking about is that they would have one max slot to pair with Melo and Kristaps, and people were saying Kyle Lowry was the name that they might be looking at, but I don't think there's any chance he goes there. I think he's almost guaranteed to stay in Toronto, but they need to improve, and I think this also transitions well into how the report in the last couple of days that Derek Rose is seeking a $150 million contract, which may have been okay. What has it been, 7 years ago when he was at his MVP level? But at this point, he's nowhere near that. He'd be lucky to get 4 for $40, especially with the way his attitude's kind of been. I think ultimately someone might sign him, hint, hint, Kings. But his career has just kind of been very interesting in so many ways, with the injuries and then the court case this summer and then whatever this was. And I think he's not really a guy that you want on your team's roster.
Yeah, he's been a roller coaster, and when he does play well, he does benefit a team. But like you said, he drops 25 points or more and your team is 1-5. So how much is he really benefiting the entire team and not just himself? And his recent actions are definitely a sign for concern for this Knicks team. And I think in all, it speaks to Phil Jackson's regression as a great basketball mind in this league. It's been a couple of years now. Obviously, he made the draft pick to get Porzingis. That was great. But a lot of the moves that he's made have been questionable. And going forward, is this the guy that you want to run your organization, who's just willing to put it all on the line for a guy like Joakim Noah, who can't play, again, more than 20, 25 minutes a game? So they're in a weird state, that Knicks team.
Yeah, and if you had to put your money where your mouth is, do you think they are able to sneak into the 7 or 8 seed in the East and make the playoffs, or do you just not see that happening?
I just find that hard to believe at this point. It seems like a team that is pretty willing to blow it up if they can. I think in a perfect world, Melo is quick to say, yeah, I'm done with this, let me out of here. I don't know where his trade partners, where the trade would line up, and that's maybe another podcast in itself. But, you know, you go down this list of Eastern Conference teams, I don't see any teams that New York can jump over. They're definitely not jumping over Milwaukee, Charlotte, Washington, Chicago, Detroit. These are better teams than New York, and I just don't. Maybe even Philly jumps them at some point.
No way.
Yeah, I'm gonna start that early, because Ben Simmons is coming back in maybe a month now. And this is, you know, seeing this Philly crowd, I'm pretty pumped up for them.
Well, yeah, we are one of the unofficial sponsors of the Philadelphia 76ers on this podcast, just because of our love for them. And I kind of forgot that it is already January, which means Ben Simmons' time is coming, as you've said. And we can quickly mention, too, last night in that Knicks loss to the 76ers, that the 76ers did decide to play Nerlens Noel only 21 minutes he did get 21 minutes, and that Jahlil Okafor was the one who got the DNP. What are your thoughts on that situation quickly?
I think that's the right decision. I think Nerlens Noel is a superior defender for one, and quite possibly the better offensive player in this league. Jahlil Okafor, the problem becomes not playing Jahlil Okafor, not letting people see how good he is going to drop his trade value, and that's a guy that's actually at this point already has less of the trade value in him as an asset. So it's a difficult decision for Philly to make, because you want to keep Noel happy, you want to keep him there, because I think we can both agree on this, and Noel fits better with the system that they're running and playing next to Saric and Ilyasova. But at the same time, they probably need to move one of those two guys, and it's hard to get someone moving that you just sit on the bench. So it's definitely something to watch going forward.
I wish they were able to just kind of fit all three pieces together until they got one of them moved, because they're not really helping their trade value with their current setup about just not playing one of them each night. It also hurts when you have Saric and Ilyasova. And then, as we said, Simmons is coming back, so the front court glut that everyone was talking about is finally coming to fruition, and we're seeing the problems manifest themselves.
I think he's going to slip right into the point guard spot, though. I know. Maybe defensively it'll be a weird to match up, but I think they're ready to put him right into that point guard slot, and we're going to see a lot of him and Embiid in the pick and roll.
Well, I agree. I think he will be the main playmaker, which is what I would probably call him. But I think he'll still defensively, I think he has to match up on fours. I think threes will just be a little too quick for him, and he can just. If he's able to get a four to guard him, I think that he can just blow right past him with his quickness, which is one of his best kind of assets. Next up, we got the... So, recently in the media, we've seen Steph Curry drawing some criticism from people just because he is the two-time defending MVP, one-time NBA champion, just... all everything shooter, and we've seen him not be at those same ridiculous levels, and I don't necessarily know if that's unusual or a bad thing, and he deserves this criticism because he's still averaging 24.7 points per game on 47% shooting, only 40% from three, which is really good for anyone else but him. He's still leading the league in free throw percentage, so I don't know how much of this is warranted. What are your thoughts on all this hubbub about nothing?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's nothing, but as far as Steph Curry goes, he's a streaky guy. There are periods of time where he'll just not be making his shots in a couple of regular season games, and last year we kind of saw it extended into the playoffs. If you look at his season stats, he really didn't have that great of a month of December, and that's maybe the big concern with everyone. In a few games, not back-to-back-to-back, but over a six-game span, he put up 15, 15, and 14, which are pretty pedestrian numbers for him, shooting at best 42% in those games. So it wasn't a great month for him, but that doesn't mean that he's in a slump of any sort. He's, you know, learning to play in a different system, and this is now, I guess, the third year in a row where there are different guys around him. Like, at first, it was just kind of him coming into his own, and then him and Clay really coming to his own, and then Draymond was kind of thrown into the bunch, and now he's got to learn to play with another all-star and Kevin Durant. So he's got to learn each year, and I think he's doing it. So by no means is this guy in a slump. Maybe his numbers are down a bit, but he's becoming a better player because he's getting more time around great players.
Yeah, and his usage percentage isn't even down that far. It's actually only 0.2% lower than it was during his first MVP season. So he's still getting his shots up. I think he's probably handling the ball a little less just because they're such a ridiculous passing team and they're probably going to set the all-time assist record. But I think he'll continue to adjust to it. And we haven't even seen one of those ridiculous Curry streaks quite yet. We've seen it in the flow of some games, but not just the ones that we're accustomed to after the past few years where he just explodes and you're texting your friends saying, hey, you got to come watch this guy. We haven't seen that quite yet. And if we've learned anything from him, you can expect that to happen at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I just looking at the last four games, he's taken at least 11 three-pointers. So I think we're heading towards that territory where he's just about to tear it up, but it'll happen.
Well, and I bet Steve Kerr feels it, because this team is just at a different level when Curry is at that crazy spot. So I'm sure Kerr wants to start rounding him into form as we're nearing the midpoint of the NBA season. Do you have anything left to say about this Curry nonsense, or can we move on to some happier topics?
Yeah, let's get out of Curry land.
Next up, actually, just about, we're recording this at 1 p.m. Pacific time, 4 p.m. Eastern. So just about 2 hours ago, the NBA released the second version of the All-Star voting online by the fans. If we were to play the All-Star game today, just under these, which only make up 50% of the vote, 50% of the voting, whereas the media gets 25% and the players get 25%. For the East, the starters would be LeBron James, Giannis, and Kevin Love, with Kyrie and Dwayne Wade in the backcourt. And then in the West, it would be Kevin Durant, Zaza Pachulia, and Kawhi Leonard, and then Steph Curry and James Harden in the front court. So I think there are some interesting things inside of these votes. The Zaza thing, I think, is just a non-story. I know you said Howard Beck did some math on it, that he's not going to start. Basically, there's 0% chance that happens. What were your takeaways from this round of voting?
I don't think there was too much wrong aside from the Zaza pick in the starters. I really like to see that Joel Embiid is fourth and in the front court for the East, and Kristaps and Melo are tight in there as well. So it's, you know, big cities are still getting their pull and for their players. The sad thing to me is that not enough people are recognizing a guy like Kemba Walker, who's down at number 9, actually getting less votes than Jeremy Lin. And I'm sure you'll talk about it a little bit more, but the fact that Zach LaVine made even the top 10 list is a surprise to me.
Yeah, LaVine just kind of popped up. He's at just under 100,000 votes. And I just assume it's just because people recognize the name from his ridiculous dunk contests the last 2 years. So I think that's the reason that you're seeing his name. We also see Eric Gordon and Andre Iguodala in the top 10 lists of Western Conference guards, which just kind of shows you that quality marketing on team Twitter accounts can go a really long way. Yeah, there's not a whole heck of a lot to take from this. I think one of the players that I see we can just get right into if we were the ones deciding the All-Star starters, because I think I can make my point a little bit better there. Let's just start with the Eastern Conference, and I will list my five real quick. I would go Kyle Lowry, who I believe has been the better of the two Toronto guards over the course of the season. Isaiah Thomas, who is averaging 28 points a game. I looked at that last night, and I was just stunned that it was really that high. I thought it'd be closer to 24, but that's a lot of points for a little guy. And then in the front court, LeBron, Giannis, which we talked about a few weeks ago, and I'm glad that he is getting the recognition he deserves. And then the guy that I think is being underrated is Jimmy Butler. He's fifth in the Eastern Conference below Kevin Love and Joel Embiid. I love Embiid as much as anyone, but I truly believe that Butler has been the third best front court player in the NBA this season. He's averaging 25 points a game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. He does so much for this team. He's up to 88% at the free throw line, drawing almost 10 attempts a game. His three-point percentage has bumped up a little bit this year to 34%. So I think this guy truly does deserve to be an all-star. Who are your Eastern starters?
Yeah, I think for the front court, I definitely agree with LeBron and Giannis and maybe even Jimmy Butler. But someone that I think you can maybe make a case for is Paul George and what he's been able to do throughout the season, now averaging 23 points, 6 and 3, with 2 steals a game, essentially shooting 45% from the field. This is a guy that kind of does it all, as well as played a lot of defense on that side. So that could maybe be the one that I'd bump Jimmy Butler out for, but I could definitely agree with him going there as well. On the guard side of things, Isaiah Thomas, in my mind, has to be a starter in the Eastern Conference. He's been, in my mind, the best guard. Kyle Lowry can definitely ball, and he's definitely been up there and with his play. But the second guard that I would pick is Kemba Walker at that 9 spot. He's improved across the board, essentially, except maybe his rebounding numbers, which are down a bit. But he's now shooting 42% from three while taking more three-pointers a game. He's averaging 23 points and 6 assists a game. He's kind of the leader for a team that's really gritty and finding its own down in Charlotte there. So I would put Kemba Walker in there because these New York basketball players need some love, and he's one of them. So
yeah, I don't hate the Kemba pick. I think he certainly deserves to make a spot on the roster for his first time in his career. The Dwayne Wade thing, it's just the name value gets him into that spot and in a big market like Chicago. So I don't think it'll be interesting to see if he even makes it. I don't know if he's been a top 6 or 7 guard in the coach's mind in the conference. So that'll be something to watch. Let's transition over to the West. And how about you go first on this one?
Yeah, sure. I think for the guards, it's probably pretty easy. Russell Westbrook and James Harden should be the two guards there. They've had incredible seasons at pretty individual levels, but also a lot of team success early on. The front court side, I think, also pretty obvious. You just put in Kevin Durant, Zaza, and Draymond. Be fine. Going Kevin Durant, Kawhi, and Anthony Davis seems to make a lot of sense. I think that's probably the USA team of the future for one. But at the same time, those are two elite defenders in Kawhi and Anthony Davis, and Kevin Durant has had a stellar year joining this Golden State team.
Well, we didn't even think about this beforehand, but I have the exact same starting five: Westbrook, Harden, Durant, Davis, and Kawhi. So that's non-eventful, but I think it just says how kind of maybe obvious it is. I think there's a chance maybe Anthony Davis doesn't get a start, but I think in the end it'll probably happen. And then the other thing in this All-Star voting that I wanted to talk about was Tony Allen. He recently posted a video of him picking his All-Star choices, and he just kind of made a joke of it. He voted in all of his Memphis teammates, which is fine, that's acceptable. But on the Eastern Conference, he did not take it seriously whatsoever. Basically, whoever's name he noticed in the top half of that alphabet, he ended up deciding, including Michael Beasley and Luke Babbitt. So I think it just kind of shows that maybe people didn't like how the fans voted, but not having some certain players have a vote would be a good idea.
Yeah, and he did vote for Kemba Walker, so I'm glad he did vote. But it should be said that perhaps he is an anomaly among the players, and there are probably a good number of players that are taking this seriously, but this is true. This is something that maybe the NBA should maybe consider going forward. It's like maybe players need to have a certain number of minutes played to be voted in by other players or something of the sort. But if players are just going to make it a joke, then 20, a quarter of the votes don't matter. And that's a problem.
Well, yeah, and then you have the other 50 who are voting for Zaza.
Yeah.
And then it just, in the end, it is just an entertainment event. But I think you, if you're going to have this factored into Hall of Fame arguments, I don't think that should be factored in if you're going to have some jokes made about it. And then the final topic of the day are the two games that we thought are notable. First off, tonight the Pistons are playing the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are 13-point favorites. I just wanted to bring this one up just because I think the Pistons, who have not been all that good this year, they've been slightly better since the new year. I think they end up beating the Warriors just because we've seen them give them problems in the past, and They beat them last year in that 9-loss season for the Warriors. So I'm going to pick them to do it again, even though it's at Oracle.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a great game. The Pistons have looked really good as of late, and they just had that, didn't they? They had just had another big win, and overall the team has started to really come together, and Jeff Van Gundy's vision for that team has really come together. My pick is going to be another Western Conference.
Stan Van Gundy. I just wanted to correct you. You said Jeff.
Oh, I said Jeff? Oh, excuse me. I should never give Jeff credit for anything. But staying within the West Coast, the Western Conference, Minnesota is taking on Oklahoma City tomorrow. And this is a pretty big start for Oklahoma City, who's going to be taking on a lot of road games going into the rest of January. They're starting a stretch of at Minnesota, at Sacramento, at LA, at Golden State, Utah, New Orleans, playing at home against Dallas, but then going back on the road to play Cleveland and San Antonio to close out the month. So it's going to be difficult for them. And you know, looking at the stats, Russell Westbrook and co are 15-3 in games that Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double. So I think we're going to have to see a lot of that in the rest of this month for them to be successful and stay afloat in the way they have throughout this season.
Yeah, that's an extremely brutal stretch for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And maybe starting off in Minnesota isn't the toughest of the bunch, but it's just kind of a preview of what we'll see going forward with those five insane road games with LA, Golden State, Utah, Cleveland, and San Antonio in this month. So yeah, I think they're in an interesting spot. Westbrook has been doing his things that everyone in the world is talking about. Roberson's actually been a nice little surprise. He's been a little bit better on both ends of the floor. And then their stash brothers are competent, and they show up every once in a while. So I think it should be an interesting stretch of the season for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Before we depart, Dante, anything else in the NBA world that we should talk about before we reconvene?
I think we're good for the most part. I will say on that Thunder front, just one more thing. It's weird to say, obviously this team is centered around Westbrook, but considering the constant success of Westbrook and his play, I think this team goes as far as Oladipo can take them, and not that much has been said about him, but the True. Team doesn't look as good when he's not on the floor, and that's just because he needs to be there to stretch, and he needs to be there to kind of lead them as a playmaker and a defensive playmaker as well. So
that's a very good point. He can also, when Westbrook does decide to pass the ball and let someone else attack, he's a nice little secondary playmaker. And then one final thing. What are your thoughts on a little NBA London action as the Nuggets Pacers are just about at half? Do you like the NBA maybe playing a game or two overseas just to kind of globalize the game, as they would say?
Yeah, I love that, and I think all sports are starting to take that route. But as this game is becoming easier and easier to broadcast around the world, the people that they're broadcasting to are going to want to see them play. So good on the NBA to keep on moving that forward and kind of being at the forefront of global expansion.
Well, I think that'll just about do it for us. We will hope to talk to you in the next week or 10 days or so, and hopefully we'll have some trades to discuss in the next couple days. But you should follow our podcast account on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod, the number 2, not the word. You can find both of our Twitter handles there. And that'll do it for us. And we will talk to you guys later. Take care.